Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so lovely to hear.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
No, it's a pleasure. You're brilliant. You're a brilliant interviewer, man.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
I really liked your questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight, too.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for your lovely review. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I love it. And, and it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Today I chat to children's author Adrian Beck, and this episode is a little bit special because of the release of the wonderful book Total Quacker. This collaboration between some amazing Australian authors includes Sally Rippon, Matt Stanton, Deborah Abella, Tristan Banks, Paul Jennings, Adrian Beck, Alex Miles, R.A. Spratt, Jacqueline Harvey, and Oliver Pomervan. It also includes illustrations by James Foley. The special thing about this book is that all royalties go to Dimmick's Children's Charities, who supply books to children in need. It's a wonderfully fun book for a wonderful cause. Please welcome Adrian Beck, and I'm your host, Danny V. Welcome, Adrian. I feel like we've been planning this conversation for quite some time, so I'm super excited to chat to you about Champion Charlies and Total Quack Up.
Oh, yes, it's been a long time coming, but all good things come to those podcasters who wait, Danny.
It's true. And I think through the social media, you feel like you kind of know people before you've even met them and spoken to them. It's a strange world we're living in.
It is, isn't it? Do you feel like you know me?
Not really, no. But I feel like we've had, you know, some banter going on, so it's not completely and entirely strange. And we've also had, you know, some shared childhood sort of incidences of our own lives recently, so we can relate to those whole parenting issues.
Yes. Parenting, isn't it fun? You know, it keeps you on your toes, though.
It does. It makes you be able to problem solve in ways you didn't think you'd be able to problem solve. Do you find yourself as a parent saying the most bizarre sentences and you kind of stop and you go, I can't believe I just said that?
Oh, I just find myself saying everything that Mum and Dad used to say, and it makes me... I just don't know how I feel about that. I found myself saying, how many times do I have to tell you? I say that all the time.
I say,
don't drink the bath water way too much.
Yeah, isn't that something that comes in your vocabulary?
Why would they drink
bath water? I know, it's so gross.
Terrible. I don't know. I think I'm becoming my mum and dad, a weird sort of mixture of them. I suppose that's natural. But, yeah, you do find yourself... You think to yourself you're going to be this amazing parent, I think. And I think you're going to be in some sort of Hallmark sort of telemovie starring, you know, a young Dean Cain sort of, going from soccer match to, helping with homework to cooking dinner and all that sort of stuff. And then the reality sets in and really you're just trying to get from one crisis to the next without collapsing, I think.
That is spot on because I think growing up in the 80s, you looked at Family Ties and all those shows, you're like, that's the kind of family I'm going to have. But really it's not. It's screaming at 8:30 because there's toothpaste in eyes and all sorts of other things. I was at the shop the other day and I can't even believe I said this sentence. I said to my daughter, can you please stop being a dog and be a dog at home because it's really busy? I walked away and thought, I can't believe that sentence just came out of my mouth. It's not something I'd imagined.
It's fine to be a dog at home, though. That's right.
Totally open to all that kind of stuff. But at the shop, people were walking on her, you know? So it wasn't... Be a dog at home, darling. I don't know where that came from.
It's good advice, though.
I think that's for all of us, really, yeah.
Exactly, yes. Parenthood is great, but, it's... I think you have to sort of get... You get match fit, I think. You sort of... You're operating at, like, 70% of your capacity you know. I sometimes feel like my youngest daughter is a little bit like the Terminator, like she has Terminator vision. So she'll come into a room, and you know those scenes in the Terminator where you see that sort of red vision from the Terminator's perspective?
Yes.
And you see, you know, something in the corner and then something up the other side, and they're analysing everything. Well, I think she comes into a room with Terminator vision, and she has a look at the bookcase, and she has a look at the dining table, and she has a look at the TV, and she works out the most efficient way to destroy everything. And that's pretty much her MO, I think. But and as a parent, yeah, they do wear you down, and you get used to operating sort of in this sort of weird daze, like you're a cast member of The Walking Dead or something. But yes, she's a wrecker. She likes to come in and just wreck stuff, which is funny, and it's always interesting. But our eldest is a creator, and she likes to spend hours doing Lego and drawings, and she likes to write little books and all that sort of stuff. And then our youngest will come in with a big texter, and she'll just draw all over everything and smash everything. So yeah, look, it's fun.
This podcast has now turned into parenting tips. I don't know how good these parenting tips are, but tips all the same.
I think it's, yeah, how I survived. Yes. I think that's what I'm going to call it.
How I survived parenting. Anyway, yes. For those who did come for the books, we can talk about books too, right?
Oh yeah, there's books too.
Yeah, there's
yes.
books too.
In between all that, yeah, it's there is a little bit of book writing, and there's a little bit excellent. Of podcasting that goes on, I imagine.
Now, I was reading your website about Champion Charlies, and I loved the part where you described riding the BMX bike and injuring yourself on a wildly unsafe trampoline. It just yes. sounded like the perfect 80s childhood.
Yeah, well, I think we really did have an 80s childhood. Like when we were super young, myself and my brother, we lived opposite an empty block, and that empty block opened out into the bush, a bushy hill. This was in Tassie in Hobart. And so we used to sort of combine with the neighbours, the next door neighbours. There was a couple of kids that lived directly next door to us, and they had the BMXs as well. And we used to spend pretty much mum and dad would say goodbye to us. This would be a Saturday. They'd say goodbye to us like about 9 o'clock, and we'd spend almost the whole day in the bush creating dirt tracks, you know, creating jumps, creating forts, just racing around. And then there were sort of like the other gang of kids that we sort of like to pretend was spying on. And we just sort of, I don't know, mum and dad wouldn't have seen us till like, you know, 5 o'clock that night. So it started to get dark. But we just, yeah, we had a great fun with back in the day when, you know, helicopter parenting wasn't really a thing. it was like, yeah, you guys go and have fun. But, yeah, we had a lot of fun on the BMX bikes. And also those trampolines. You know how the trampolines now have the special
the cushioning that they get, netting?
Yeah, super, super safe. Well, our next door neighbours, we had a trampoline, I should say, but we were basically just playing in their yard, and they were playing in our yard at any given tick of the clock. And they had one of those old trampolines with the springs on the sides where yes. you get your legs caught in them. And half the springs were missing anyway. And we used to have this great game where we would climb up onto the wooden fence, which separated our yards, and we'd jump off the top of the fence onto the trampoline and try and double bounce our mate off the trampoline and onto the ground. And look, in hindsight, it seems a little dangerous, but nothing really ever went wrong. I mean, the other thing we used to love to do too was the hills hoist. We had a yes. hills hoist, and we used to, it was on a slight slope, our backyard. So we used to run from the top of the backyard, jump up onto the hills hoist, and then swing right around as fast as we could, and then launch ourselves into the apricot tree, which again sounds a little dangerous, but at the time we thought it was great fun.
It sounds wonderful from a fellow 80s child over here. So it sounds wonderful to me. And look, I've got a story of my own about injuring myself on the trampoline, but it is really not for public consumption. So
was it an old school trampoline, one of those ones with springs?
It was definitely an old school trampoline and involved an emergency trip to the doctor.
Oh, no.
Look, I'm fine now. I'm fine. But it wasn't pleasant.
No lasting effects.
No lasting. Maybe psychologically, perhaps. But
yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah.
And that's why I think us 80s children who were very free, we turned into helicopter parents because we know what can happen.
Yeah, exactly. We know how close we came to ending it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess as adults, we do it in different ways. We might not be jumping all over the place, but, you know, you measure the risks that you have to take or the risks that you take to do things that you may not have done before, I guess. So they're lessons.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had a friend who was pretty successful, and he said to me that he actively takes a risk every single day of his life. And then he goes, you know, I'm not saying, you know, do something life-threatening, yeah. but just make a conscious effort to take a risk in some way every single day, because he found that if you play the percentages, yeah, a lot of these risks actually come off.
Or just being that pushing that comfort zone, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting. Now, your mission statement, going back to the book of Champion Charlie's, was football meets funny.
Yes.
Now, to encourage young readers, how did this sort of motto shape your stories for these for this series?
Well, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't a super serious book. I don't really like books that take themselves too seriously. well, I do. There's certainly a huge place for that, but I didn't want to write a book that took itself too seriously. I wanted to write something that was fun to read, because I've read a lot of these sporty books because my girls are sporty and I'm interested in them anyway. I'm fairly sporty, and I've also written a couple, and I just didn't want to do a straight sporting book. The thought of that just made me sort of my toes curl up. I wanted to do something that was skewed it slightly. So I thought, okay, well, what I want to do is I want to put a heck of a lot of humour into my sporty book, because sport is about fun. It should be about fun anyway. So there's no reason why we have to take every single aspect of sport super seriously. So I thought, if I can inject some humour into the sporty stories, I'm going to get the best of both worlds. I'm going to get the exciting sporting action, but I'm also going to get some laughs along the way, some gags, some silliness, and some slapstick, the sort of stuff that I love. So I thought, this is how I'm going to make this book my own. I'm going to inject a heck of a lot of humour into it, so that even the kids that aren't super sporty are still reading it and enjoying it for that other level.
I love the fast pace of the book, and I love the gender equality of Charlotte and CJ as co-captains of the team. I thought that was a super important message, even though you were trying to keep it fun. I thought that was important as well.
Yeah, that's definitely a running theme with me. I had Ella in the Kick It to Nick books, and I had in my Alien Zoo books, I've got twins as well, Jen and Ben. And I really think it's important to maintain that gender balance in these books. And particularly, again, with the sporting books, if you read a lot of these sporting books, even some that are very modern, the ones that are coming out like this year, a lot of them are very male-centric. Apart from you've got some great netball ones, which are on the other side of the scale and things like that. But I really wanted to write a book that could be enjoyed by kids that enjoy the sport of football or soccer. And it doesn't matter if they're boys or girls, I just wanted to make sure that male and female readers would enjoy it. And it's sort of one of those things that I like to put in there without drawing attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way when I go to schools and I can pull up the banner and show Charles or CJ and Charlotte on the banner, I don't even have to say anything, but all the girls that are in the class that are about to have the presentation, and all the boys, they know that it's a book that's catering for both of them, or not even catering, that it features both genders, all genders, because that's important, I think. Yeah. And girls play soccer just as much as boys. Girls play sport just as much as boys. I know that firsthand because of my girls, and I'll keep pushing that, because I think it's vitally important in this day.
Absolutely, and that's what I liked, the seamlessness about it. It wasn't a big deal. It is what it is, and there were these two really fun characters in there, and they played soccer, and I thought that was really great that it wasn't an issue, it was just there.
I had an issue in the first book, mm-hmm. because the concept behind it is that there weren't enough players in the males team, there weren't enough players in the females team, so the two teams had to work together. So I was really mindful that I didn't make it a boy versus girl thing. I wanted it to be a personality clash, not a gender clash, mm-hmm. because, again, I didn't think that was a valid storyline at all. I wanted it to be completely about the personalities involved, as opposed to oh, boys can't play with girls, because I totally and utterly reject that. And I wanted it to be much more. So I wanted to make sure that there was no confusion. If kids were reading it and they're thinking, oh, the boys don't want to play with the girls and the girls don't want to play with the boys, it's not about that. It was about the fact that these two teams had never played together before, and they weren't sure if they could gel as a team in time for the season. So I went to great lengths to explain that without it, hopefully without seeming like I went to great lengths.
Yeah, and you can see that with Charlotte and CJ, you know, because they do have very different personalities, and that's how they kind of co-captain. So it kind of works.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, ultimately, it's that tried and true idea that, you know, differences don't actually have to divide us. They can actually make us stronger. And that's pretty much the whole theme for the book. And it's not, you know, it's not rocket science. It's not a new theme or anything like that. But I thought it was pretty important to put that into the books, because basically, yeah, they're sporty books. And you can take that in any direction you want to take it. But I really thought it was kind of an interesting take to make it a little bit about everyone working together, even if we're different, and also making it a fun story to read. So it's not just all about being told, learning lessons and being told what to think. That's in there a little bit, but it's more about a fun journey and everyone learning to work together.
Yeah, and talking about Total Quack Up, which is a great segue, because that book is just so fun. I mean, it's a new project. It's coming out very, very soon. It's edited by yourself and Sally Rippon and illustrated by James Foley. And it's just so amazing in so many ways. The stories are there to make you feel good. Tell us how this was born.
Well, Sally and I are quite good friends, and we were catching up for coffee at one stage, and we sort of were having all these big, deep and meaningful conversations. And one of them was, how do we actually use our talents to do something good for the world? You know, so just the sort of standard sort of chit chat that you would have over a coffee. So I didn't really know how we got to that point, but we did. And she's obviously, she does a lot of these initiatives for the community. She's involved in a lot of literacy programs and all these sort of different organizations, and so she's already doing a lot of that. This is Sally, and I just wondered, is there something formal that we can do which would do something to help out the community, to have a positive influence in some way? So I went away and had a think about it, and then I texted her a couple of days after that, and I said, well, what about the, you know, the old tried and true method of writing a book and donating all the royalties to charity? And she was completely up for it. And I said, do you think we could talk some of our writer friends into, you know, donating books for absolutely free? And she said, why not? I'm in. I'll help. Let's do it. And so that it basically just came from there. Because obviously there's a lot of these compilations around. There's a lot of short story compilations around with various different themes. But as for the kids especially, but none of them actually have a charity element to it. So we thought, okay, we'll donate our time pulling this all together and overseeing this project. We'll talk all our author friends into donating stories for absolutely for free, and we'll talk James Foley into illustrating the whole thing
and
for
magic.
Absolutely nothing. Yes, that's right. You know, what could go wrong? And we basically, we set about talking to everyone, and everyone was so up for it. Everyone was so positive. It was so heartening, because we kind of approached them a little bit meekly, a little bit thinking, oh, we're asking them to, you know, authors get asked to do things for free all the time, and here we are asking them to do it again. But everyone was so up for it, and everyone totally got it straight away, because I think everyone believes in the charity just as much as we do. So the Dimmicks Children's Charity, they pretty much, in a nutshell, they get books to kids who need them. So it might be a remote community, or it might be an Indigenous community, or it might be kids who are new to the country. It could be a library that just hasn't had new books for, you know, years and years and years, a kid's library or a school library or something like that. So wherever there's a need for new books, Dimmicks Children Charities are the ones that try and come to the aid of those people and places. And we thought this is such a great initiative that we would love to be able to do something to help them if we can. So, yeah, as I said, we just came up with this idea, contacted everyone, and it just happened really quickly. We pitched it to one publisher, that was Penguin Random House, and they were so open to it from the word go. And it's always one of those things. You know how sometimes you're working on something and it takes on a life of its own, and you kind of wonder, hang on, who's at the steering wheel here? it kind of, as soon as we started sort of kicking it off, it just sort of was like a snowball, and it just happened. And even though we were obviously pushing it along and overseeing it, everyone was so willing to get involved. And I mean, I talked to James Foley once, and I said, James, I sat him down, we had a coffee, and I said, I've got this idea. it's for charity. And I told him all about Dimmicks Children's Charity, and he said, oh yeah, I know them, they're great. And I said, so we're looking for an illustrator to illustrate the whole book absolutely for free. And, you know, he did not even pause to think. He said, I'm in, I'll do it. And, you know, when you have those conversations with people, you get that little sort of jitter in your heart, and you think to yourself, we're doing something that's really quite good here. We're doing something that actually matters. And people get that. Everyone that we've talked to gets it straight away, and they want to help and they want to be on board. And we're so thrilled that they've all been so generous and have got on board. And we just hope that it goes through the roof for the charity, because everyone's doing it for the right reasons. And it's actually such a heartening thing to be involved in.
Absolutely. And not only is it the perfect collaboration, I mean, we've got Deborah Abella, Tristan Banks, Jacqueline Harvey, Paul Jennings, Alex Miles, Oliver Pomervan, Sally Rippon, R.A. Spratt, and Matt Stanton, like some amazing people, as well as, you know, yourself and Sally, and as you've mentioned, James Foley, like this amazing collaboration. But the stories are wonderful as well, and they're so fun.
They are, they're great. And the funny thing was, because we were able to pull in such a great lineup of authors, we pretty much didn't give them too many parameters. We basically just said, it has to be a story that's funny. That's all you need to write about. A funny story. It can be about absolutely anything. And they all came back with some, you know, just such great, hilarious stuff. And Sally said to me at one point, she got a little worried, I think. She goes, what if they come back to us and we don't actually like what they've written? And I said, oh, I didn't think of that.
Well, we're going to have to just love it.
I said, well, we'll have to have a chat with Penguin and work out a way to address it. And fortunately, that didn't happen because they were all so good.
The caliber of people you've got writing for you—that's right. They were just wonderful.
Well, you know, they say with the director, 90% of being a great Hollywood director is good casting. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's something in that. Maybe 90% of being an editor of a compilation is getting good authors to work with you. So we're so thrilled and thankful that they all jumped on board, and they've done such a terrific job. And I mean, the stories are so varied as well.
Yeah. You know, realize there's a motif of poo and pigs in there, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is what we were going for. That was the working title.
I was wondering if that was the brief, poo and pigs.
I think maybe we will revert to that
in the sequel,
Poo and Pigs,
Judgment I love it. Day.
There is. I mean, when people write funny stories, they tend to come back to Poo and Pigs, don't they?
They do. You know what's so funny? And we'll get onto this in a minute because I really want to hear about the Ella Wallace story.
Oh, yes.
I read this to my kids. I said, we're going to read this. You know, we're going to read this tonight and tomorrow night. And I let them choose the first story. So I said, I'm just going to read you all the titles and you're going to tell me which one you want me to read. And the first one they demanded that I read was Who Blocked the Dunny?
Yes. Well, so Ella Wallace. Now, Ella Wallace is our 11 and 3/4-year-old competition winner. So we only really went live with this for like 2.5 weeks, I think. 2.5 weeks, we plugged it on social media. People were probably getting sick of it. Plugged it on social media and put it on the telly as well. And we just tried to get kids to enter and get them excited. And we tried to get the word around amongst teachers and teacher librarians and parents just to get kids excited about creative writing, because one of the kids was going to be published alongside all the other authors in this book, which we thought was a pretty amazing prize.
It is amazing.
Yeah. So we got 170 something entries, which we had no idea what to expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought maybe we'd get 10 or maybe we'd get it. We didn't know. We had no idea. But we got heaps, which was great. And we sat down and read them all. And yeah, Ella's was amazing. I mean, that's the thing. I think it's goosebumps. R.L. Stein, I read once that he used to come up with names of stories before he actually wrote the stories. So he'd come up with a title and then he'd write a story to fit the title. And I think that there might be something in that. I like to do that sometimes too, since I read that. But also, when Ella came up with Who Blocked Up the Dunny, I mean, how can you not read that one? I mean, that's brilliant. That's it almost starts to conjure up images from the very first sentence. So
that's right.
That was excellent. So we read that, and Sally actually was, because we divided all the entries into two, and then we were going to swap, or we swapped at the end of the day. But when Sally got to that, she stopped and she read it out to me. you can imagine Sally is so nice and she's so lovely. And then it was kind of odd to hear her talking about blocked dunnies and certain bits and pieces coming out of the dunny. It just sort of didn't make sense to me. Like, this is Sally Rippon. This is Billy B. Brown.
She needs to do the audiobook.
That's right. Yeah. So she read it out to me, and, that moment, we just knew that was the one. That was the winner for this time round. So we were thrilled with Ella, and we rang her that afternoon. We didn't know whether she was going to be home. We didn't really have any idea what to expect when we called her, but we were so excited that we called her up and put her on speakerphone and had a chat to her, and I think we got tears during that conversation. And, I mean, this book, it's so emotional for so many different reasons and so many good reasons. Like, it's happy emotions, this book. Mm-hmm. All the way through is happy emotions, because we were able to, in a small way, make Ella's dream of being a published author come true, which was a thrill for us. And also, hopefully, this book will do so much good once it gets out there in the world, and it raises money for Dimmick's Children's Charity. So I look at this book so fondly, as probably it's the most exciting and heartfelt, and it's probably the book that I'm the most invested of any that I've done, just because of the meaning behind it. So mm-hmm. We're thrilled to have done it, and we hope it goes through the roof, and we want to do a lot more.
Yeah, well, look, it's an incredible book, and I loved it, and my kids loved it, and they're only 4 and 6, and they right. loved me reading it, and I was doing all the great voices. They loved Pigarella. They loved Who Blocked Up the Dunny. They were just having a great time, and even my 4-year-old still is now going around going, Pigarella, Pigarella, so resonated with them.
Right. And, that's the fun thing, because we were able to use some authors that have existing series. So mm-hmm. we had a return of Nanny Piggins for R.A. Yes. Spratt's story. And we also had a return of Tom Weekly for Tristan Banks' yep. story. And it's kind of a fun little nod to their best-known characters. So you can find out the next installment of their adventures if you check out Total Quack Up. So that was exciting too, because, as I said, we didn't say what they had to write about, but mm-hmm. they came back with some of their best-known characters, so we were thrilled about that too. That was excellent.
And as a reader, knowing the story behind this, reading about Ella, it was just, I think it made for a richer read,
Oh, right. Yeah, great. Well, I mean, context is mm. everything, isn't it? So we wanted to make sure that if a kid or even parents that were reading it with kids picked up the book, it was very important for us to do a little foreword to explain why we put the book together, to explain just how generous all the contributors have been, and to explain what the book's intention is, because as soon as a parent has bought the book, then they've helped out and they're part of the journey. So we wanted them to feel like they were part of the process too, because they obviously are. I mean, I had to be stopped from writing forwards for pretty much all of them. I wanted to write a forward for Ella. I wanted to write a forward for Paul Jennings. But Sally said, no, less is more. Less is more. And so you have to, when Sally speaks, you have to listen.
You have to listen.
But Paul Jennings, we were thrilled that Paul Jennings was able to and give us a story for the compilation, because Paul Jennings got me into reading when I was young, and I wouldn't be writing if it wasn't for Paul Jennings. So it's come full circle. I used to religiously watch Round the Twist, yet I would only ever like read Foot Trot Flats or Garfield or Tintin and things like that. I didn't really jump over into chapter books. Not that there's anything wrong with graphic novels, obviously, but I never made the jump. And then Mum noticed that I was watching Round the Twist so much that, and she had the inside word, I didn't realise this when I was a kid, that Paul Jennings was behind it, that she gave me Unreal to read. And ever since then, something sort of exploded in my mind. And ever since then, I had been a reader, and I wanted to write my own stories, and one day I wanted to write something that made a kid feel the way I felt when Paul Jennings wrote a story that I read. I think he is a genius and a national treasure, and it's come full circle that he's allowed us to put one of his stories in our book, because it's just such a thrill, and he got me into writing and reading in the first place. And in a way, the format of Total Quack Up is a little bit of a nod to his Un series, because they're all short stories and they're all about a different character and they're all funny. And there is definitely an influence of his work on the format of the Total Quack Up book.
And that's just wonderful, isn't it? He having such an influence on you, not as only as a reader, but then as a writer, and then him contributing to the book. Like, what a cool story.
Yeah, I know. We couldn't believe it, actually. We couldn't believe it. Because we sat down, obviously, and once Penguin said, yes, we want to do this, we sat down and we thought, okay, so now we've got to come up with a wish list of people that we want to get involved. And obviously, you have your wish list and then you have your wish list, right? And so we had all our friends, which we definitely wanted to get involved, and then we had our what ifs, and Paul was at the top of our what ifs, and we thought, well, I mean, we can only ask.
That's and right.
And we asked, it happened.
You took that risk that day and it worked.
That's exactly right.
You have a new Facebook group with Sally Rippon, the Kid Lit Club, and this discusses everything to do with kids' books, such as and it's such a great group, and you're really passionate about raising childhood literacy. So is this an extension of the project that is Total Quack Up?
Well, what I love, Sally and I, we're a good combo. We work well together. Like, I go to a million miles an hour, and she likes that, because there are, not to tar everyone with the one brush, but there are a lot of publishing types that sort of take a slow and steady route, which is good and great. But I like to go to a million miles an hour, and that might be because of my TV background, I'm not sure. But I think Sally likes that. And so we like to collaborate on things together. So we thought, right, we want to do Total Quack Up. But we also really like, and I especially like, the Kid Lit community. Mm-hmm. I like the online community. And I think I like it a lot, mainly because everyone's working on their own projects, and that's very much a solo existence. And you're sort of sitting there at your desk, and you don't have your workmates, and you don't really have that camaraderie that you would at your traditional workplace and traditional professions. And so I really like the way that the online community, Kidlit community, is very supportive, and there's a lot of banter and there's a lot of chat, and I think it's a really positive place. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to create a group that is all about the Kidlit community? So that might be authors, that might be publishers, it might be teachers, it might be parents, it could be anyone that's got an interest in children's books. I thought it might be a fun place and a positive place for everyone to chat, to find out what each other are up to, and to talk about issues in kids' books, like, for example, how you're talking about the gender balance in the Champion Charlies. Things like that are really interesting to me, and I would like there to be more discussions about those topics, those progressive topics around kid lit. And I thought it would be great to create this community, which I hope grows and grows and grows, where everyone feels safe and everyone feels happy to contribute and sort of lift each other up and build up each other's projects, but also to discuss some of the kid lit issues. So really, basically what I'm trying to say is, instead of following like 1,000 different people, hopefully it simplifies it a little bit, and everyone can post within the one spot, and everyone can chat within the one spot, and you can still follow 1,000 different people, of course, but this is a nice little, it was a sort of a little bit of my nod to the community. And also, Sally and I are planning on doing a lot more video as well. Mm-hmm. So I've done a few sort of test interviews, you might say.
I've seen Author Hangout. I've watched Author Hangout.
Very good. Well, I've done a few of those things, and it might be fun, and it might be another way to galvanize the community if we were to do if Sally and I were to do a little internet TV show in the Kid Lit Club, perhaps every fortnight, talking about kids' books, pumping up each other's work and what's new, what's happening, what the trends are, tips for aspiring authors, talking to teachers, talking to parents, all that sort of thing. So we're hoping to do something like that in 2019. But if we get our act together, it might happen sooner. But she's awfully busy, and I've got a bit going on too. So we're trying to push that forward and offer some genuinely good content in this Facebook group, so that people feel like it's a good place to be and it's a good place to share.
It's so wonderful. And, you know, this is kind of how I started the podcast, because I'm an English teacher and I wanted to bring authors into the classroom more and more and more. And so this was a way to do that. And you guys are doing that as well with the Kid Lit Club. And I think it's just so important because, you know, kids hear from their teachers and that's great, but to hear from the authors who have written a book that's really resonated with them, or, you know, that they're studying, can just make the difference in their engagement.
Absolutely, when they find out that they're human, for sure. And that's the thing. We want to pump up Words and Nerds and all sorts of other podcasts that are doing the same sort of things. Like, we're not competing. Our idea is we're not competing with anyone.
Absolutely not.
We're trying to make sure that everyone is in that same community, and that everyone's, you know, all the great things that people are doing, others are getting to see and hear and learn from them. So that's the idea behind it. But also, yes, as you say, with the interviews with authors. So the Kid Lit Club, because it's on Facebook, it's more geared towards adults with a love for kid fiction or kid literature. But we plan on, when we do our interviews with kids authors, we plan on doing like kid friendly versions, which we'll post on YouTube after the fact. So not that, you know, we expect them to go into too many dodgy areas, but but there might be some stuff that's a little dry for some kids that are watching. So we'll do two versions. We'll do a cut down version.
Yep.
Once all that comes to pass. So that's the grand plan. That's what we want to do.
Sounds wonderful. And even when I watched Author Hangout, I just thought, what an awesome resource to put in your classroom, just to, you know, for the kids to watch for 10 or 20 minutes to just get to know the author, and then they could read the book. And I thought that was an amazing, I mean, I watched a few of them, but I love the one with Felice Arena. You look like you're just having so much fun.
Yeah. Well, Felice is a good friend of mine. We thought we have to do something special. Did you get to the part where we were, you know, we did the French challenge?
Yes.
Yeah, that's where it sort of went off the rails a little bit. And, Yeah, look, escargot. It's an acquired taste, and I'm not sure I cooked it properly.
I was impressed with the cookies, can I say?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, I didn't really cook them at all. But,
oh, you said you baked them. I was so impressed because you're like, yeah, I baked these.
No, I should have said I did, but no, I didn't. But I did cook the snails, and they weren't great, to be honest. I'm not quite sure why they're so popular over there. But
was it the cooking, or was it the fact that they were snails?
Like, I think it was all of the above. They don't even look that good. Like, they. Seriously, yeah, they look like they don't change their appearance that much.
They don't.
No. Things like Author Hangout, which I think I will try and do another one. That's my YouTube series. Yeah. That's aimed squarely at kids. I think I'll try and do another one. My problem is juggling all my commitments. Yeah. I've got a lot going on and two small kids, so it's tough. But I'd love to do another one. And we just set up a green screen in my lounge room, in my living room, and shot that there. So, look, I might do another one of those, or I might try and get our adult skewing interviews edited for the kids and post them on YouTube after we've done them on the Kidlit Club. But the thing is, all of these things, and even working on my TV show, all of these bookish attempts are really trying to humanize authors and show the kids that, you know, these books aren't just printed by computers, you know, they're actually genuine stories coming from a creative place. Someone has labored over these stories and they've come up with these incredible ideas, and they've done them just so that you could enjoy them. And in turn, we hope that the kids are inspired and that one day they might think about doing the same thing, because it's possible. Certainly in growing up in Hobart, I never met a single author.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, even though I was inspired by Paul Jennings and I used to write a lot of short stories, I don't think I ever thought to myself that I could ever actually write a book and actually get it on the shelf and make it happen. So I guess I spent a lot of time sort of not pursuing that and pursuing a bunch of other different things. Even when I used to draw a lot when I was a kid, but I never thought, well, I could be an illustrator. I thought maybe I'll be an architect, you know? Mm-hmm. So I like the way that on TV, on YouTube, wherever, we are humanizing authors and showing kids that it's possible to be creative and have a career as a creator and move into a world where the arts are valued. And I think that kids' books sometimes get, you know, the short end of the stick or whatever the saying might be, but I think they're so important because they remind kids to dream and they help kids use their imagination as opposed to sitting down and having something in front of them that does all the imagining for them. So I like the active use of the imagination that you get from reading a book or listening to an audio book. And I think that if kids see that they're coming from a human place, I think they can connect with them a little bit more. And that's the point of doing all the stuff I do with other authors, is that I want to humanize the authors and I want people to see that they're artists and that they're trying to convey something that's really special to them. It's not just, you know, words on a page that are printed by a computer. And I think kids, especially when they get authors in their classrooms, they can see firsthand that these people are real and these stories are real and they actually mean something, you know. They connect on a human level, which is something that I didn't get when I was a kid. I thought of books as a little bit alien at times. But I like the way that kids, particularly these days, hopefully, are closer than ever to authors. And so they make that connection and hopefully they're more likely to pick up a book and follow an author's series based on the fact that they get to sort of get to know those authors behind the books.
Yeah, absolutely. And bringing back that joy of reading. And I think, you know, as we're saying with podcasting and with YouTubing and Facebook, we're tapping in to all those platforms that kids use to then bring them that joy of reading to, you know, also go back to the book. So I think it's a really good way of you know, tapping into this really positive community, because I feel the same way about the community. I think it's just such a positive and wonderful community of authors and writers and podcasters and teachers and whatever, and tapping into all that stuff to really bring back that joy of reading, because, and that's what Total Quack Up does, you know, it just brings back that joy of reading.
Yep, we're bringing joy back.
Oh, excellent.
And I suppose it's a little bit like Champion Charlie's as well. Like, people sometimes take reading really, really seriously. Mm-hmm. And there's a time to take it seriously, absolutely. But there's a time to just have fun and enjoy it. And I think everything that I've tried to write so far, and hopefully in the future, I've just tried to write something that I think kids will enjoy, and they'll have fun reading it, and they'll want to pick up the next one, because it would be great to think of books as little parcels of joy.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
that spark like moments in kids' brains, you know, like that feeling that you get when you disappear into a story and you can't wait to find out what happens next and you bond with the characters. I mean, that is one of the most powerful things in the whole world,
yeah.
You know, and we might as well explain to kids that it's fun to experience those things.
Absolutely.
You know, I think sometimes we think about literacy levels and, yes, you know, grammar and, you know, spelling. No, don't worry about any of that. Just read it because it's fun.
Yeah.
Read it because you're escaping into a fun world that you love. That's all you need to worry about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a similar conversation with John Purcell about, you know, literature versus genre fiction. And just about, it doesn't matter. As long as you get something out of what you're reading and you get joy and pleasure, or it makes you think or whatever, who cares? You know, who cares what people think it falls into? Because who are we to judge what literature is and what literature isn't, you know?
Exactly. And as long as kids are enjoying it, that's the main thing. It doesn't really matter what they're reading. And so I find that a good way to connect with the kids is through humour, because it's obviously disarming. But also, kids love to laugh. They're so ready to laugh, so much closer to having a laugh than most adults, dare I say it.
Yes,
so yes. Why not have some fun? I mean, I'm a big kid anyway. I pretty much feel like my mental age is about 10, and I have to sort of fight against that in every aspect of my life. But except for when I'm writing books and when I'm talking to kids. So then I can just be the inner 10-year-old. The inner 10-year-old comes to the surface, and I can just talk about the latest Doctor Who episode and the latest reboot of Transformers, you know, and I can talk to them about all the things that adults don't want to talk to me about, Danny.
Well, look, I'm listening, because I think my age is probably 11 and 3/4. So
we're on the same wavelength.
Definitely.
But I think it's reading is fun, and reading should be seen as fun. Reading shouldn't be seen as a chore.
Yeah.
And so whatever I can do to help that, I'll absolutely do it.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. It really is. And I usually, my last question for authors is what's next? But you've got so much what's next. You've got your Facebook page, and then the videos you're going to create, and the continuing of the series, and maybe another Total Quack Up. I want to ask what else, but I don't think you can fit anything else in.
I'd love to do another Total Quack Up. I would love to do a Total Quack Up. My plan is to do a Total Quack Up every year.
Oh, I love it.
But it all depends on... It all depends on how well they go.
Yeah.
Like if it goes well enough, like with every book, there'll be more. So let's hope it does really well, because it's doing great things, and we want to keep doing great things. And it's an easy way for us to keep helping. And so hopefully it comes out every year. But I'm working on three other ideas. At the moment, what can I tell you about? I can tell you in vague terms that I'm working on a book at the moment, which may or may not see the light of day. It's one of those ones that you work on and then you pitch it, as opposed to, you know, pitching it and then working on. So it's one of those tricky ones. And it's basically, I love The Young Ones, and I love Rick Mail, and I love the series after The Young Ones called Bottom. Now, I'm not sure if you know those series too
I know
well.
The Young Ones. I haven't heard of The Bottom, but I'll have to check that out now because I loved The Young Ones.
Yes, well, check out Bottom. It's hilarious. I would even say it's slightly better than The Young Ones. But I've got a character that's based on basically Rick Mayall, who plays himself, really, in everything he does. I've got a kid character who's based on Rick Mayall. So I'm writing, I say based on Rick Mayall, influenced by, you know, Rick Mayall's character. So I'm writing a story about that kid who thinks he is the best at absolutely everything, and he thinks he's the coolest kid in his whole school. But in reality, he couldn't be further from the truth. So all the hijinks and slapstick that he gets up to is hopefully really fun to read. It's really fun to write. And I'm listening exclusively to Beastie Boys while I'm writing it. So
fantastic.
Pretty much, you know, it's got that real energy to it because I'm a little bit like, I got this tip from Tristan Banks where, and Tim Harris for that matter, where they write, they create playlists for their work.
Yep.
Well, I've created a playlist for this one and it's Beastie Boys and it's Regurgitator and it's Custard and it's Ween. So they're all sort of 90s bands and some fantastic. Of them are a little bit off center. But pretty much it's got that sort of energy and it's coming through in the manuscript. But, you know, who knows? It may never go anywhere. It may never go anywhere, but it's a lot of fun to write. And
how
I hope
can
it
not go anywhere with that beautiful playlist you've got going? And
I know.
It's
I should
so great. Because we started with the 80s and then we've ended with the 90s. Like, you know, there were no, and there's no good music after the 90s. No,
well, we all know that. Oh, that's true.
I just don't want to get myself into too much
it's
trouble,
true because
but yeah, I agree.
I used to listen exclusively to Triple J, right? And then I remember there was a moment where I just started to thinking, why am I listening to this now? I don't like this anymore.
Yes, I
and I switched it off and I thought, right, this is the moment where I've grown up and I'm no longer listening to modern music.
It's the moment where you go, yep, I am now old.
Yep. And then I think I remember flicking on Gold FM a little while ago and they were playing Nirvana and I thought, hang on a second, on Gold FM? What? They can't be playing Nirvana. That's not fair. They should be playing Hall & Oates. But now I listen to Double J because they just do 90s. So I'm stuck in the 90s.
Yeah,
like a lot of people
too.
Are stuck in the 80s, but I think I'm stuck in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So that's coming through in my books for sure.
That's so great. And it's just what happens, I think. And, you know, I think I'm going to have to change the name of this podcast because I think the last sort of 10 podcasts, I've always slipped in this 80s-90s reference.
Yeah. So
it's
going to
be Words and Nerds, the retro podcast.
The retro years.
Yeah, the retro years. All this nostalgia, it's so great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It is. Well, it's awesome for us because we grew up in it. I don't know how other people feel.
Well, that's the problem because I'll go and do presentations and I'll start talking to the kids, you know, about the Young Ones and I'll start talking about Beastie Boys and they're like, what are you talking about?
I mean, they don't even know who the Spice Girls are. They're not going to know who Beastie Boys are.
No, and it's tough. So I see it as an education. I'm giving them an education
Absolutely.
In some of the, you know, some of the great art that stopped happening after the 90s.
Well, it has been so fantastic to talk to you about so many things that I hadn't anticipated, parenting and books and the 80s and the 90s. So it's been absolutely wonderful and thank you so much for your time. And I really, really hope Total Quack Up does tremendously because it is such a fun book to read.
So it's out there and everyone's welcome to go and check it out. We did a big launch. Sally and I did a big launch in Sydney where we got a heap of kids to turn up dressed as ducks. And unfortunately, I decided that it can't just be the kids that have to dress up as ducks. It has to be myself as well.
You said fortunately, right? Fortunately.
Yeah, fortunately. I don't know. The photos, I don't know whether they do all that much justice to me. You know, it was a bit of fun. But it's we're all about fun. So it's out. We hope kids are enjoying it. And we'll do our darndest to do another one as well.
And I haven't met a kid who doesn't like to read about poo or pigs. So, look, you know, it's perfect.
Well, I'm all about poo and pigs, exactly. So it's perfect. I'm gonna inject some more poo and pigs into my next projects because I can see they're resonating.
Anyway, thank you so much for your time. It's been so fun talking to you.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.